4 to 6 weeks ago, the Russian special forces captured 2 British colonels and an MI6 operative. What were they doing in southern Ukraine in a command and control center of the Ukrainian armed forces? And were they the only guys there? I think the interesting point is that the Russian media focused on those 3 UK guys and did not make a peep about anybody else being there, which is highly probable that they were. And to speculate, maybe they were there, and given the background, the 2 British colonels, they were orchestrating a false flag operation.
Simon Hunt, good afternoon to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, and yourself?
You know, I am. I'm doing well, all things considered, which is what I want to talk with you about. I think the big story, which is not unexpected, is that the Fed came out dovish, or just recently Powell came out just under immense political pressure, dovish. But it does seem like the U.S. economy is significantly slowing down. In fact, the world economy is significantly slowing down. What are your thoughts here? What does this mean for the dollar, the bond market, and really gold?
Well, that's a good opening question. There are some informed American economists who actually believe that recession in America started in October. The problem is twofold. First, that the labor statistics, the employment statistics, were, to put it bluntly, have been manipulated for a long time. And partly through the birth-death model. And finally, the revisions had reached such a state that it has become clear that employment is falling, unemployment is rising. And that is a trend that's probably going to persist at least for the next 6 months. The other fundamental problem with America's growth statistics related primarily to consumer spending is that CPI is not 3%. It's probably last year 9%, or according to my friend, 10.8%. If you use the real inflation number, then what does that tell you about consumer spending, which last year in nominal terms grew by 3%? Those higher inflation numbers are really what households have been seeing in their weekly and monthly spending bills. The manipulation of CPI dates back to Arthur Burns in the 1970s, when he didn't want to raise rates, despite the fact that he knew that inflation was rising. And successive administrations have continued that manipulative process. There's a guy that I follow called John Williams of Shadow Government Stats. Takes all of the data back to before Arthur Burns started the manipulating process and concludes that CPI last year was 10.8%. I read a piece, which has since been deleted, that Larry Summers' team took the CPI methodology back to 1983 and concluded that last year's CPI was 9%. So, the US economy, when you add in the cost of tariffs, which somebody has to bear, and it will be the importer primarily. We have the US economy in recession into the early months of next year. The rest of the world is following suit, or most of it, I should say, particularly Europe, which is basically dead in the water. Look what's happening to bond yields. It's telling you there's a crisis approaching. The big unknown is Europe, or I should say the EU3, Germany, France, and the UK, going in to support NATO in Ukraine. I think from everything I pieced together, that is a real risk. The EU leaders need a diversionary tactic from their own problems into government debt, household debt, immigration, and the electorate's growing discontent and frustration with the authority of Brussels over their own countries, whichever they may be. And you can see it in the weakness of the UK's Labour government, the French government, and Chancellor Merz's German government. So I don't see anything but, in real terms, the European economy having hit a brick wall, starting to fall. In China, we had a pretty good recovery in the first half of the year, particularly the first quarter, as export companies pushed everything they could into America before the tariffs hit. The economy is now slowing down, but on a recent analysis I did, real GDP should rise by around 4% this year, having been, I think it was 5.6% in the first half of the year. So where does this leave us? Trump is obviously, as you suggested, pressurizing the Fed to cut rates. Why? Because the economy is weak. And he knows it. If the economy was strong, you would have higher rates. So we will probably see the Fed and government stimulus by the end of this year in America, followed by Europe and some other countries. What is this? Where does this leave us? This actually creates a problem in how I see the world evolving. Our base case for a long time has been that fiscal and monetary stimulus will start a wave of recovery and rising inflation around the middle of next year, which will take us into 2028, but it will be inflationary driven, which means that long-term bond rates, instead of being 4% by 2028, will be in double digits. What does that do to a highly indebted system? You're going to have a deep recession and a crash in all financial markets. My problem is that if, as I think is quite likely, that Europe or the EU decides to step into Ukraine as a diversionary tactic, it means that money will flood out of Europe before Europe introduces capital controls. The issue then is, what will be the repercussions on the rest of the world? So I'm beginning to fear, it's not yet a forecast, that what will emerge early next year won't be an inflationary takeoff, but at best stagflation and more likely recession. But this is a conundrum that I've not yet concluded. And I think, a lot is going to depend on the outcome of the Shanghai Cooperative Organization Summit in Tianjin, China, which is taking place now. Why do I say that? Because you now have Russia, China, now India, calling the big shots. And this is not a forecast, but what I think might come out of the summit meeting is to change the parameters of the SCO from a diplomatic forum into a security organization, one that can challenge NATO.
Wow.
So I think what emerges over this week could be very important, certainly from watching the Russian news channels, RT News. You can see the lobbying going on between Modi, Putin, and Xi. And so I think there is little doubt now that Modi, who has been wooed by Trump, has now decided that India cannot trust America in any deal that is made between the two countries, and that Modi is turning India into a very supportive member of BRICS and the SCO. So that's how I see things at the moment.
Okay, so let's go back a little bit to Europe, and then we'll work our way through China, India, and Russia. Do you see this war, do you see it winding down, the war in Ukraine and Russia winding down at all, or not?
I think on the contrary, I think we're going to see sometime over the next couple of months an escalation.
An escalation.
For the simple, as I said, for the reason being that Europe needs a diversionary tactic from its own internal problems. Wars normally unite people together, though not so sure whether it will this time around. That's the premise that these guys are working on.
Yeah.
I think to add a little bit of spice to what I've said, if we go back, time goes fast, 4 to 6 weeks ago, the Russian special forces captured two British colonels and an MI6 operative. What were they doing in southern Ukraine in a command and control center of the Ukrainian armed forces? And were they the only guys there? I think the interesting point is that the Russian media focused on those three UK guys and did not make a peep about anybody else being there, which is highly probable that they were. And to speculate, maybe they were there, and given the background, the two British colonels, they were orchestrating a false flag operation. Now, Russia having thwarted that one, do these governments through NATO have plan B? Probably. So all I'm saying is, and this is speculative thinking, is that we should expect another, a new false flag operation. blames Russia and then gives NATO the excuse to move heavier into Ukraine.
Okay. So I would agree with you, actually, and I've spoken to a couple of other, what I would say, people I really look up with, I call them experts, they're saying, if not the exact same thing, very similar to what yourself is saying. But work out for me and all of my viewers and listeners why Europe needs to do this. And I say that theoretically. What kind of shape are the big three economies in Europe? What kind of shape are they in? I see them as imploding, and they have been imploding, both the UK, Germany, and France. And it's almost like they need to go to war, as you're alluding to stay in power or whatever have you. But my question really is work out their economies, and do they have any chance of recovering? And would this potentially break up, if they don't pull this off, break up the EU and even NATO?
I think in the longer term, not immediately, and I would say probably around 2028 or post-2028, the EU will break up.
Wow.
In decades gone past, before the EU was created, I had a wonderful financial mentor. His name was Sir George Bolton, who ran the gold pool during World War II, was on the board of the Bank of England, and post that period took over a relic of the British Empire called the Bank of London, South America, and in the process created the euro dollar. I mention this because before the euro was physically created, he and other similar great minds were very critical about creating a trading bloc that did not have a common financial pool. So, I mean, if you look at, and I've forgotten the numbers, the amount of debt through the euro pool that Italy owes Germany and France owes Germany, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, none of which is going to get paid back.
Yeah.
It's a framework that is bound to collapse. So, it will collapse, but powers that be will do everything short term to shore it up because of the global consequences and the consequences on America. So again, these powers that be are determined to again kick the can down the road. And it was very, very interesting. The recently retired general manager of the Bank of International Settlements gave his final speech in Tokyo, in which he had two messages. Message one, the world cannot keep growing based on debt. And two, central banks should stop every time their economy gets into trouble of putting in a put. And I think this was the real reason why Powell has been so reluctant to cut rates, because I'm sure, without knowing anything, that the general manager of BIS would have talked to Powell, being the leading central banker in the world, about what he was going to say. So again, you come back to an even bigger issue. It's not just the US government via the US president's pressure on Powell to cut rates. It's an even bigger issue. So the bigger issue is you can only, what happens when there is no road left to kick the can down into, which I think is 2028, or could even be second half of 2027.
Indeed. So, and you're starting to see, well, I don't want to say you're starting to see, you are seeing here in the U.S., the dollar really, I don't want to even say rolling over, it's starting to significantly decline. And correct me if I'm wrong, bond yields are significantly creeping up. And it's hard for me to see a growth path for the U.S. with bond yields being up where they're at, if not going much higher.
I think that is absolutely right, but I think that between now and the middle of next year, the Treasury will make moves that will allow 10-year treasuries to drop from around the 4% level to around the 3% level. But starting around the second, around the middle of next year, is when the real danger starts cropping up. Long-term 10-year treasuries moving higher at an accelerating pace as inflation rises higher. You're already in America seeing vegetable prices, other prices soaring, not just 5 or 10%, I think vegetable prices 30-odd percent. And according to the FAO Food Index, in July, the last reporting month, food index, global food index, rose by 7.6% year on year. Danger signals. Those danger signals, I think, risk being compounded by the end of the year, with the repercussions of that massive earthquake in Russia's peninsula. Name begins with K, I can't remember the name. But climatologists that I talk to say that if the current trend persists, then Northeast America is going to have one of the three coldest winters that they have had in the last 30 years. What's the impact on plants growing, food prices, business activity?
Yeah. They've all, and the thing is, I can attest to that. I live here in Atlanta, Georgia. This is anecdotal, but my grocery bill is probably up in the past 12 to 18 months. I would say at least 30%.
And what's been the real inflation, not 3%.
No, I'm sorry. I said 3%. I'd say 30%.
I know, but I come back to the reported number being 3%. That's the manipulated number.
Yeah, it's all
households know it.
It's all it is. Yeah, I don't have 3% inflation in my household, and I have a household of 7 of us here. I have we have a big grocery bill, and it's massive now. So let's go back to the BRICS, but specifically Russia, China, and India. They still perceive a threat from NATO, obviously. Do they see this as a false flag here, or they just see this as, okay, this is a house of debt that's falling and starting to implode. We need to get our own economies out of this, or just trading with each other. And also, it seems like there's a lot of geopolitical tensions there as well, a possible war, especially really, I would say with China. Work that out for me. What do you see happening with the BRICS?
I think the big picture is very clear, if one is being dispassionate. And that is that Washington is scared that its hegemony and dollar domination is going to be at risk should China's growth path continue. I think what scares them is that China not only has the largest and most efficient and competitive manufacturing supply chain, but years ago, it initiated processes to introduce industrial robots into the system. Last year, from memory, they installed 290,000 in new industrial robots, almost twice the level of the combined numbers from America, Europe, and Japan. So that you now have humanoids actually running factories in China. There's one factory making smartphones without a human anywhere around, producing a smartphone every minute. So work that out in terms of capacity, prices, and costs. I think the second element that worries Washington is how China is leapfrogging military technology. There was one report I read that stated that China now has unmanned submarines and that they have proven to be effective and safe.
Wow.
So I'm just quoting one example. I was in Bangkok recently, last week, talking to a guy that runs hotels. And he says, the Chinese, We now get all our equipment from China. It's not just that they're price competitive, but it's the quality and it's the after service. Said our Western suppliers just simply cannot match it. And I think when you go around the tracks, that's what you hear.
So then do you see the world then, again, longer term, bigger picture, splitting into this centric region of Russia, China, and India versus the West, which is really just decaying? Do you see that accelerating or do you see that happening?
I think it's bigger than that. It's a unit. It is going to be a war between the unilateral world led by America and the multilateral world led by Russia and China and now India. And so many of Asian, Deep South, emerging countries want to join the BRICS organization. So I can't remember the terms, but in GDP, purchasing power parity terms, the BRICS group of countries, GDP is very close to the rest of the world, led by America. But the growth rate is about double America's world.
Oh. And you obviously expect that to continue.
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
You expect that to continue, obviously, that growth.
Yeah, I do. And I think, hang on. I think these regional wars are part of this bigger picture. The growing conflict between the old world and the new world.
And the new world is really Asia or with Russia, the BRICS.
Asia, Russia, Africa. Middle East is still up for grabs.
So talk to me about the Middle East. Where do they fit in this equation? Because Trump was over, again, that's obviously the hot spot, but Trump was over there in Saudi during the summer and received with great fanfare. That being said, you have the whole problem, and I say this with carefully, the whole problem with Israel and Iran. Yeah, how is this up for grabs, and how does this the Middle East play into this new world is structured?
I wish I knew the answer. But my thinking goes as follows. Trump is clearly backing Israel. When you look at it dispassionately, he has no other alternative, given who was one of his strongest backers. So Israel is in internal conflict. I mean, I get through a friend stuff from the Hebrew press, and it's alarming. But the rightists in the government are determined to create greater Israel. You look at what's happening in Syria and Lebanon.
Yeah.
You look at America building biggest embassy in the world just a few kilometers from Israel's border. I think you've got the Gulf countries at the moment playing both sides, rather like Modi played both sides until President Trump imposed a 50% tariff or tax on India buying oil from Russia. So, what I perceive happening is underlying all of what is going on will emerge a fight between two Arab sects of Sunnis and Shias. So that means, if I'm right, that the cooperation that was starting to be made between Iran and Saudi Arabia under America's underhand pressure has been stopped. So look at it another way. America will have control of Gulf countries' oil if this development continues. The next stage is to create regime change in Iran and so take control of Iranian oil reserves. From what I piece together, that is not going to happen, because Iran, with one of the leaders now in Tianjin in China at the SCO conference summit, they have determined that it is a waste of time to negotiate with America. So they have been, since the attack on their country by America and Israel, have been developing, reinforcing, I should say, their own defense, satellite defense systems. Both Russia and more in particular, China, have installed their latest systems. There are rumors that Iran has developed a new ballistic system that is impossible to shoot down. We know that when Iran retaliated against the Israel attack, they created very severe damage to Israel's infrastructure. But Israel is determined, with America, to, at the very least, create regime change. The problem from people who know Iran well, is that one of the consequences of the attack has been to unite the Iranian population behind their supreme leader, and in particular, the younger generation. So, I conclude that within 12 months, and maybe within 6 months, and maybe within 3 months, Iran will actually attack Israel. All Israel attacks Iran.
Oof.
So, that's how I see things.
Okay, so that has big time implications on the price of oil.
When it happens, yes.
Which has big time implications on the world economy.
Yes. What happens to the world economy with oil at 150 plus?
Right? It slows down.
Why is China building up its oil and gas reserves?
Right.
They have intergovernmental special arrangements.
Okay. And this points out why gold is really at, this is Labor Day, September 1st, 2025, why gold's at $3,400 plus an ounce, and silver is pushing past 40. Correct?
Correct. Gold is driven much more by escalating conflicts and wars than by inflation. The big driver to gold prices is always escalation of conflicts.
And that's why you have all the central banks, really, or the big central banks around the world, just stockpiling gold, correct?
Yeah.
Gosh.
So you then have to ask, who owns most of the gold in the world?
China, right?
Yeah.
So do you see gold being revalued or coming back into the system as a currency that's traded upon then?
That's a huge question. I am convinced that when BRICS announces their currency, it will be supported by gold. I think you can put forward an argument that America will revalue the price of gold in order to give the Treasury more assets as an offset to their rising budget deficits. I'll go one stage further. Many, many years ago, probably 10 years ago, I had a friend who was executive director, one of the big financial international financial institutions in Washington, and therefore knew well what was going on. He said to me, so I'm going back 10 years, I would bet that at some point in the future, there'll be $2 $1 will be for domestic use and will be backed by the gold that America owns. Second dollar will be the offshore dollar, which will be allowed to fall to whatever level. On our technical work, the DXY falls to around 50.
50.
28, 2029. 20, wow. So, whether he's right, I don't know, but you can actually put forward pretty good argument why what he said 10 years ago will materialize.
Yeah. And just imagine, I mean, that has huge implications in regards to inflation. It has huge implications in regards to really the bond market and the economy if that were to happen.
Yeah. Carol, again, I come back. I don't think it's going to happen tomorrow. It will happen during a major crisis. So I come back to same year every time, 2028.
You got it. Well, Simon, I've kept you way too long. I want to give people, how can people find you if they want to do business with you? And I'll put all of this in the show notes. And I also just really want to, on the record, this interview, as they all do exceptionally well. Thank you. And what I mean by well, just getting the word out. But yeah, how can people find you?
Yeah, simon-hunt.com.
I will put that in the show notes, both on the YouTube channel, the Apple and Spotify podcast channels.
Thank you very much, Andy.
Hey, thank you so much, Simon. I have a handful of go-to people, and you're one of them. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks. I enjoyed that chat.